Hello there. Today is Friday, August the 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, North Korea fires more missiles towards South Korea and calls it a warning. President Trump ramps up his attacks on Democrats after 2 days of presidential debates.
The rage-filled Democrat Party is trying to tear America apart.
Also ahead, international organizations tout the health benefits and urge governments and businesses to adopt policies encouraging breastfeeding. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump Thursday played down what appeared to be North Korea's third missile launch in just over a week, saying this would not affect his willingness to negotiate with Pyongyang.
Short-range missiles, we never made an agreement on that. I have no problem. We'll see what happens. But these are short-range missiles. They're very standard.
South Korea's military said unidentified short-range projectiles were fired at 2:59 a.m. and 3:23 a.m. local time on Friday from North Korea's South Hamgyong province into the East Sea. Joining us now from Seoul, South Korea, VOA correspondent Bill Gallo. Bill, why are they stirring things up again?
It seems that North Korea is trying to increase pressure on the United States and South Korea ahead of possible nuclear talks. That is assuming that these nuclear talks ever take place. There was supposed to have been a breakthrough in this process whenever Kim Jong-un met Donald Trump at the DMZ in late June. The talks were supposed to begin within a couple of weeks, is what U.S. officials had said. Well, it's now the beginning of August, so that has obviously been delayed. And there's real question about whether these talks will ever even begin.
President Trump did say on Thursday that he didn't seem too concerned about it.
The strategy seems clear that he is continuing to lay down these launches as short range. It seems that it is an attempt to preserve the possibility of talk. For what reason is hard to say. Obviously, you have an election season upon us in the United States, and I think Donald Trump realizes that if North Korea continues to make headlines with longer range missile launches, that's not necessarily good for him. This is a situation that Donald Trump has already said he's completely fixed. After his first meeting with Kim Jong-un in Singapore, he said the problem has been addressed, the problem's been dealt with. North Korea is no longer a nuclear threat. So I think he has some incentive to continue to portray this in the best possible terms. However, Kim Jong-un seems intent on letting Trump and the rest of the world know things are not okay and he's not happy.
I've spoken to a lot of experts who say they doubt very seriously that North Korea will really ever completely give up their nuclear weapons. Is that what you're hearing from a lot of the people in that part of the world?
You know, I think there is an assumption here that North Korea will not give up what it sees as the only way it can protect itself at the end of the day. But there is a growing consensus that while North Korea will not give up its nuclear weapons entirely, it is willing to engage in some sort of process whereby it reduces its nuclear arsenal. The question is whether the United States government would be okay with reaching that kind of incremental deal. Obviously, the United States is not going to anytime soon recognize North Korea formally as a nuclear weapons state. Although even that, it's a bit interesting because North Korea obviously has nuclear weapons. It can obviously use them. It's tested them for a long time. It now has ballistic missiles that is capable of delivering them. So even that is sort of a formality. But the problem is if the United States recognizes North Korea as a nuclear state, would that sort of legitimize it and encourage other countries to be able to take these steps?
My understanding is that their latest weapons test involved some new sort of rocket launch system.
Yes, well, they've been testing short-range weapons over the last 3 months, and they've rolled out at least two new types of short-range weapons. The latest test on Wednesday involved some sort of multiple rocket launch system that has been newly developed. Now, this is something that is truck mobile. It's shot from this truck launcher, and it's sort of a device that fires several rockets at once, maybe two, maybe four. We really don't know. They blurred out the pictures of this particular weapon system in North Korean state media. However, this is such an impressive little weapon system that U.S. and South Korean officials essentially are calling it a ballistic missile, not just a rocket. Mm. At some point, the difference between a rocket and a missile is blurred, and this particular weapon is so large that it could qualify as a ballistic missile. They've also been testing over the past 3 months its own version of a Russian-made short-range ballistic missile, which flies at low altitude, apparently in an attempt to evade U.S. and South Korean missile defenses. And if you talk to experts about that, they say that it could evade detection. While North Korea is testing these weapons in order to send some sort of symbolic diplomatic message towards the U.S. and South Korea, it has real military value, too. So it's important not to shrug off the importance of the military value of these weapon tests.
And the official Korean Central News Agency did say that Kim Jong-un oversaw the test firing.
Yes, he typically does. They post all kinds of pictures showing a very happy Kim Jong-un personally presiding over these missile tests. However, it's interesting that in the North Korean state media report recently, they've made a bigger attempt to blur out possibly sensitive pictures of these weapon systems. On Twitter and elsewhere, you'll find a lot of experts now who sort of obsess about North Korean state media pictures of their weapons systems and can actually derive a lot of value from state media pictures of them. I think maybe North Korea has caught on that this isn't the smartest thing in the world for them to do, so they've begun blurring out these pictures.
How concerned are the South Koreans?
More concerned with every test, I would say. They still adhere to Donald Trump's policy of playing down these short-range launches in an attempt to preserve the talks. South Korea's liberal government here prioritizes engagement with North Korea. In fact, that's perhaps the signature policy of South Korea's government. So they're not making a big deal over it. However, it's becoming more and more embarrassing to have these headlines with North Korea continuing to test these missiles, which pose such a major threat to South Korea.
All right, that's VOA correspondent Bill Gallo in Seoul, South Korea. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. President Trump will impose a 10% tariff on $300 billion worth of Chinese goods. A U.S. citizen who joined the Islamic State has been indicted in Texas. The UN chief is establishing an inquiry into attacks on civilian targets in Syria's Idlib. And Zimbabweans mark the anniversary of post-election shootings. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was center stage for Wednesday's Democratic presidential debate, and Biden often found himself under attack by several of his nine rivals on stage. But Biden was quick to counterattack in what was a freewheeling debate and also made an impassioned case that he's the best Democrat positioned to defeat President Donald Trump next year. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the second night of the second round of Democratic debates.
It was a much feistier night of debate in Detroit, with the current frontrunner, Joe Biden, facing multiple attacks from his rivals on health care, immigration, climate change, and criminal justice. But Biden also pushed back against his critics, including California Senator Kamala Harris, over their competing health care plans.
And to be very blunt and to be very straightforward, you can't beat President Trump with double talk on this plan.
So I think that you should really think about what you're saying, but be reflective and understand that the people of America want access to health care and do not want costs to be their barrier to getting it.
Biden also clashed over immigration with former Obama cabinet secretary Julian Castro. Castro wants to decriminalize migrant border crossings.
If you cross the border illegally, you should be able to be sent back. It's a crime.
First of all, Mr. Vice President, it looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand challenged Biden about some long ago comments he made about women in the workplace.
Most women have to work to provide for their kids. Many women want to be working to provide for their communities
and
to help people.
Let the Vice President
either you don't believe it today or What did you mean when you said it then?
I was deeply involved in making sure there the equal pay amendments. I was deeply involved in all these things. I came up with the It's On Us proposal to see to it that women were treated more decently on college campuses. You came to Syracuse University with me and said it was wonderful. I'm passionate about the concern making sure women are treated equally. I don't know what's happened except that you're now running for president.
But when they were not attacking each other, the Democrats were eager to turn their fire on President Trump, including Colorado Senator Michael Bennett.
We've been consumed by a president who frankly doesn't give a damn about your kids or mine. Mr. President, kids belong in classrooms, not cages.
Biden also went after Trump on some of his recent controversial comments on race and diversity.
So, Mr. President, let's get something straight. We love it. We are not leaving it. We are here to stay, and we're certainly not going to leave it to you.
Democrats debate next in September, and there could be fewer contenders on stage because of tighter qualifying rules. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, with the eyes of the political world shifting from 2 days of Democratic debates to see if President Trump would stoke racial anger, the president largely delivered his standard stump speech at a revved-up rally Thursday in Cincinnati, Ohio. Trump used the rally to tear into the Democrats he's been elevating as his new political foils, attacking four liberal congresswomen of color and their party's urban leaders, while also going after those he could be facing in 2020.
The rage-filled Democrat Party is trying to tear America apart. The Democrat Party is now being led by four left-wing extremists who reject everything that we hold dear.
He also blamed Democrats for crime in the nation's largest cities. He's following up the harsh comments he made earlier this week when he lashed out at a Democratic Representative Elijah Cummings, calling his Baltimore area district a, quote, disgusting rat and rodent infested mess.
For decades, these communities have been run exclusively by Democrat politicians, and it's been total one-party control of the inner cities. For 100 years, it's been one-party control, and look at them. We can name one after another, but I won't do that, because I don't want to be controversial.
The president mostly avoided the racial controversy that's dominated recent weeks as he basked in front of the raucous crowd for nearly 90 minutes, unleashing broadside after broadside on his political foes. Trump captured Ohio by nearly 9 percentage points in 2016, and it is a state critical to his reelection prospects. Well, the war of words also continues between President Trump and powerful Democratic lawmaker investigating the Trump White House. As we said, Congressman Elijah Cummings of Maryland. The president, again, criticized the legislator's Baltimore district, comments that many have denounced as racist. Baltimore, an hour's drive north from the nation's capital, once thrived as an industrial city. Today, like many urban centers, Baltimore struggles to deal with racial unrest, crime, economic inequality, and high unemployment. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti visited Baltimore and has this report.
4 years ago, rioters in Baltimore, Maryland, torched and looted several pharmacies after a black suspect died in police custody. Both stores are within the district of U.S. Representative Elijah Cummings. Today, the stores are rebuilt, but an undercurrent of tension remains.
Those people are living in hell in Baltimore.
President Trump tweeted that Cummings' district was a rat and rodent infested mess where no one would want to live. Some slammed the comments as an unwarranted jab at a majority African American city. Others see a grain of truth.
The killings, like you said, the rats and everything, we just need a whole ball, we just need a whole makeover.
This is an entire block of vacant houses, some of the nearly 17,000 in Baltimore. But some say
The squabble isn't about city blight.
It was political retribution.
Kim Trueheart runs a youth nonprofit project in Cummings District. She says the president is angry with Cummings because his House Oversight Committee is investigating the administration, including Trump's business dealings. The congressman has also sharply criticized conditions for detained migrants at the border.
What does that mean when a child is sitting in their own feces?
While many see the Trump-Cummings spat as political jousting with racial overtones, some hope the focus on Baltimore will bring change.
I feel that instead of downing a city, put collective heads together and let's make it better.
Trueheart says Baltimore's teens need jobs. She points to the so-called squeegee kids who offered to clean car windshields for donations.
I love the fact that they're not sitting back. They're not trying to steal it. They're out working. The challenge is let's give them legitimate work.
While Trump has focused his fury on Baltimore's inner city, Cummings District also extends into prosperous suburbs. These leafy, safe streets of single-family homes are about 20 kilometers from downtown Baltimore. Like many urban areas, Baltimore is a tale of two cities, one of which cries out for help. In Baltimore, Maryland, Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News.
Well, 400 years after the first ship of enslaved Africans sailed to America, U.S. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi condemned the grave evil of slavery in a speech Wednesday to Ghana's parliament, telling lawmakers of the West African nation the visit has been transformative for her and the other members of the delegation. Stacey Knott reports from Accra.
After arriving Sunday in Ghana with a group including members of the U.S. Congressional Black Caucus, the first female speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, and the other lawmakers toured Elmina Castle and visited the Door of No Return at Cape Coast Castle, both of which were slave forts where people were shipped in chains to the New World. Sitting next to Mike Okwai, Ghana's Speaker of the Parliament, Pelosi was the first U.S. Speaker of the House to address Ghana's Parliament. She told the House that she and her colleagues' visit was about acknowledging the past while also looking to the future. Pelosi and other lawmakers, including Congresswoman Ilhan Omar and Congressman John Lewis, earlier met with Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo. Ghana has marked 2019 as the Year of Return to encourage people of African descent to visit the nation. Pelosi told the chamber that visiting the two sites was overwhelming, saying they mark the beginning of the journey of the African-American experience.
Our delegation has been humbled by what we have seen this week. At Elmina Castle, we saw the dungeons where thousands were grotesquely tortured. At Cape Coast Castle, we stood before the Door of No Return, where countless millions caught their last glimpse of Africa before they were shipped to a life of enslavement. Being here has been a transformative experience for all of us, even if you had been here before.
Pelosi also spoke about the relationship between the two nations, thanking Ghana for its work in global security, especially its contribution to United Nations peacekeeping missions. She also acknowledged the fight against discrimination in both nations. Ghana gained its independence in 1957, and it also supported the U.S. civil rights movement. The visit has had a strong emphasis on economic and trade ties between the two nations, which Pelosi also addressed in her speech, acknowledging the efforts of the Congressional Black Caucus.
America is firmly committed to economic progress in Ghana, a commitment enshrined and advanced over the course of many years through the Millennium Challenge Partnership and in the African Growth and Opportunities Act. Together, our governments must continue to support smart developmental strategies that spur sustainable economic growth and lift up all families in Ghana and throughout Africa.
For Adjoa Safo, Deputy Majority Leader of Ghana's Parliament and the Chair of the Female Caucus, Pelosi's visit was pivotal. As one of the few women in Parliament, Safo said the speech was right on point.
I believe that with her enormous experience in politics and having risen from the local level up to the Speaker of the United States, their visit is very historical and inspiring for most of us as women.
Safo said the two nations had a good relationship, which should be further strengthened.
Ghana has got a lot to offer. I mean, when you look at stability in terms of our politics and us being the pace setters in Africa, gaining independence, and how we're progressing as a country and the support that we always get from the United States government, I believe that we need to strengthen. There's a lot for us to offer and there's a lot for them to give in terms of bringing in investment, in terms of tapping on our natural resources and in building capacity as well. They've been very, very supportive.
It was the sense of partnership Pelosi was emphasizing during the visit, along with promoting additional economic and trade ties between the two nations, while also underscoring the need to combat climate change, push for female empowerment, and provide healthcare equality. Stacey Knott reporting for VOA News, Accra.
And you are listening to International Edition on VOA.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series, education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Leading UN agencies are urging governments to adopt family-friendly policies to encourage mothers to breastfeed their babies at home and at work. The World Health Organization and UN Children's Fund say breastfed babies have the best chance of enjoying a healthy, productive life. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva as World Breastfeeding Week gets underway.
Health experts agree both mothers and babies reap tremendous benefits from breastfeeding. They say nursing mothers run lower risks of getting ovarian cancer, breast cancer, and type 2 diabetes. For babies, there are both short-term and long-term benefits. They say mother's milk supports healthy brain development in babies and boosts their immune systems so they can better fight off infections. A UN survey finds wealthier countries have the lowest breastfeeding rates in the world, with fewer than 25% babies being exclusively breastfed. This compares with Rwanda, where nearly 90% of babies are breastfed, and other countries such as Burundi and Sri Lanka, which have high rates of well over 80%. Technical officer in WHO's nutrition department, Lawrence Grummer-Strawn, tells VOA children in the richer countries would enjoy long-term benefits from breastfeeding.
Babies who are breastfed are actually less likely to become obese when they're older children. They have lower risks of SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome. They have lower risk of leukemia. And in low-income countries, it reduces risks of respiratory infections and diarrhea that are some of the big killers of children.
WHO reports increasing breastfeeding could prevent 823,000 deaths in children under 5 every year and 20,000 annual deaths from breast cancer. Additionally, Grummer-Strawn says a World Bank analysis finds investing in increasing breastfeeding would produce huge returns.
They estimated for every dollar that is spent to promote, protect, and support breastfeeding, $35 would be saved in economic gains around the world. The overall estimate is that on an annual basis, we lose $302 billion in global productivity because of the lack of breastfeeding.
WHO and UNICEF are calling on governments to support breastfeeding by enacting paid maternity leave for a minimum of 18 weeks, as well as paid paternity leave to encourage shared caring of children on an equal basis. They say employers should support nursing mothers returning to work by providing them with a private, hygienic space for breastfeeding and expressing and storing milk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Jewelry, clothing, contractual documents, and a signed guitar are among more than 400 items available at an auction of Elvis Presley-related memorabilia at Graceland in Memphis, Tennessee. Elvis Presley Enterprises says online bidding is now open for the auction at Graceland, part of the Elvis Week celebration in August. Celebration of the late singer and actor's life and career draws fans each year to Memphis and Graceland, Presley's former home-turned museum. Elvis Week coincides with the anniversary of Presley's death on August 16, 1977. The August 13th auction will include a black tuxedo made for Presley's 1969 film, The Trouble with Girls, a 14-carat diamond ring he gave to musician J.D. Sumner, and an agreement signed in 1955 by Presley, giving his manager, Colonel Tom Parker, part of Presley's publishing rights.
I still see suspicion in your eyes. But here we go again. Asking where I'm.
And you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
And we can build our dreams on suspicious minds. Oh, let our love survive. Oh, dry the tears from your eyes. Let's don't let a good thing die.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $7 million for information leading to the identification or location of Salman Rauf Salman, also known as Samuel Salman Al-Rayda. He is a key leader of the terrorist organization Hezbollah. Salman is most well known for his prominent role in the July 18, 1994 bombing of the Argentine Jewish Mutual Aid Society, a Jewish community center in Buenos Aires, Argentina, which resulted in the deaths of 85 innocent civilians. Salman is a leader of Hezbollah's external security organization, which is responsible for planning, coordinating, and executing Hezbollah terrorist attacks around the globe. At the recently concluded Western Hemisphere Counterterrorism Ministerial, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that Salman poses an ongoing threat.
He continues today to conduct terrorism on behalf of Hezbollah. The United States Department of Treasury has designated Salman as a specially designated global terrorist, and we believe this action will deny him all access to the U.S. financial system. We want this killer brought to justice.
The Rewards for Justice program is administered by the U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. Since its inception in 1984, the program has paid in excess of $150 million to more than 100 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. If anyone has information about Salman Rauf Salman, please contact the Rewards for Justice website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email lh@rewardsforjustice.net or the regional security officer at the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tom.